Welcome to Everything Belongs, a podcast for those living, creating, leading, and thriving while in the deep end of life. I'm your host, Madison Morgan, leadership coach, creative consultant, and speaker. I coach soulful visionaries and go-getting mavericks who desire to create art of their lives and take their work both deeper and higher. In this show, I'll be bringing you an overflow of conversations with my favorite thought leaders, teachers, healers, and creatives who inspire me to live more fully in my own power, worth, and wholeness, along with offering some episodes where I share my own practical insights, behind-the-scenes peeks into my process, and tools I use on my own journey. There will not be much we shy away from here because at this table, everything belongs. Therefore, you can expect me to ask the uncomfortable, juicy questions. You can expect that you'll hear people you disagree with on the podcast and maybe even ideas you've never previously considered. I trust you with your own discernment as we take this deep dive. You can expect to laugh, cry, learn, and be challenged by the guests as they share their diverse experiences and views of the world. It's my hope through learning to see that all of it belongs that you will develop a more sovereign way of holding yourself so you can playfully go after the life, relationships, and career you are made for, to let all parts of yourself have a seat at the table, to lead and create from your deepest truth and become your own source of validation, all because you finally know you're worthy of it. All that's required to get started, that you show up curious and willing. Let's dive in. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Everything Belongs. Today I'm in conversation with someone that in a million years I honestly never would have thought I would have had the opportunity to speak to. Coot Blackson is someone that has been an inspiration to me for quite a long time and is someone I really admired in the very beginning of my coaching journey with his book, You Are the One. In that book, he has a phrase that you are the one you've been waiting for. And if you've taken my program, Awaken Her Soul, you know that I quote Coot in that program because so many of the people who take Awaken Her Soul have looked outside of themselves for saviors or gurus or someone to fix them, to save them. And the idea that we are the one we're looking for is just so the core of everything that I teach. And it is deeply the core of also what Coot teaches. So I want to introduce you to him. Coot Blackson is a beloved inspirational teacher and transformational teacher. He's the author of the best-selling book, You Are the One, as I mentioned, and his new book, The Magic of Surrender, which we really dive into today. He is widely considered the next generation leader in the field of personal development, has been featured on Larry King Now, Fox and Friends, Dr. Drew, Inc. Magazine calls him the mindfulness guru, billionaire's go-to for advice. Coot offers a fresh and bold look at spiritual awareness for a whole new generation. He was born in Ghana, West Africa, and his multicultural upbringing as the child of a Japanese mother and a Ghanaian father has spanned 4 continents. He is unique in the sense that he lays a foundation for his approach to breaking down barriers and unlocking people's true gifts and greatness. And honestly, what I experienced in this conversation with Coot was a heart for service and a desire to share what he knows with people. And I was so surprised in this conversation that he really transitioned from teaching to, towards the end of the conversation, a really tender, open-hearted story about his mother's passing and his mother's journey with cancer. And so as you listen to this conversation, I just want you to keep your heart open for the way that Coot talks about surrender. That's really the core of what we talk about today, the art of acceptance, if acceptance is the same thing as surrender, and asking ourselves, like, how free do we really want to be? And Coot and I share a little micro moment around forgiving our parents, which is such a sensitive topic. And I think Coot brings such a mature and adult sense to this conversation around forgiving our parents and finding love through grief and allowing our hearts to break open whenever they break so that we move through grief into a deeper experience of love. I was just so surprised and delighted by this conversation with Coot and was reminded again of the power of the work we do here on the podcast, the work we do as we forgive, the work we do as we open our hearts to love, and really felt a love, especially for my Awaken Her Soul community. So if you're someone who's taken that program and this episode really reminded me of you and our experience together. And so shout out to those of you in Awaken Her Soul. I see you doing the deep work that Coot talks about in this conversation. So without further ado, let's dive into this really powerful conversation with Coot Blackson. Coot, I am, like I said, so delighted to have you. Your work has really impacted my life. Your story really impacted my life when I was leaving my very conservative evangelical community and taking some steps to own my truth. And so I'm really honored to have you on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yes. So I know a little bit about your background, but let's just pretend that literally you are on the street talking to someone who's not in this community. What would you tell them that you do?
What would I tell them I do? I don't know what I do. You know, I don't know if I actually do something in that sense. I undo people from their conditioning. I uncoach, I unteach, I untrain people from the patterns of conditioning that we have developed over time from childhood to function and survive and help reconnect people to their essence, to who they really are, so that they can live from that place, create from that place, relate from that place, and share their gifts with the world. And so, you know, technically I'm a transformational teacher and, you know, nationally bestselling author and speaker and what have you, small events, live events, one-on-one. I work with people. And so that's kind of a synopsis of what I do or undo.
I love that. It's something that you and I share in common is the love of the deprogramming and realizing that so many of us believe that we are our programming, but we're actually essence. We're so much more than, you know, the personalities, whatever it is that we think, how we identify even. Yeah. And I'm super curious. I know a bit of your journey from Ghana and the church there to where you are now. Could you share with us some context for how you came into this work and also a little bit about your upbringing?
Sure, yeah. I was born in Ghana, West Africa. So my father's from Ghana. My mother's from Japan. I grew up in London. Now I live in the US and Mexico and all over the place. And I've always felt like a citizen of the world, you know, like I don't come from Ghana, but I'm from Ghana. I don't come from Japan, but I'm from Japan. Growing up in the UK, I'm not from the UK, but that's a part of my heritage. So I've always felt this connection with all people, and it's been a real blessing. And so for me, as a young boy, I always felt I was very sensitive. So I always felt people suffering. I'd walk around and I'd feel people empathic, you know, feel people so deeply and their pain. And there was a part of my heart that was very touched as a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kid. And it's like, I wanted to alleviate people suffering in some way. I didn't know how I was going to do that, but there was a deep desire to do that. And so that was very impactful. But also around 6, 8, 7, I remember one of my first vivid memories was being a kid lost in the crowd, seeing a crippled woman crawling on the floor around thousands of people. And she was crawling and she picks up the sand that this man walks on, wipes it on her face and stands up. A miracle. And so week after week, I was around and surrounded by, you could say, miracles. The same man who stands, she picked up, would look at a woman in a wheelchair and say, "Why are you in this wheelchair? You're not sick, stand up." And she would say, "But I'm sick. I haven't walked in 10, 20, 15 years, 15 years, however many years." And he would say, "Stand up. Do you believe?" She would stand up. Boom. Miracle. The crowd would erupt. I see a person coming with crutches. This man would say, "Throw your crutches away." A person who was blind, this man would put his hands on their eyes and they would see. Sight was restored. This man was my father. He built 300 churches in Ghana, West Africa, a huge church in London, about 5,000 people, hundreds of thousands of people in Ghana, West Africa. And so he was a minister, a preacher, spiritual teacher, so to speak. He's very spiritual in nature, actually. By the time I was born, a bit of context, he had already been to India and had some, you could say, enlightenment, cosmic consciousness experiences. So he wasn't so conditioned in an orthodox Christianity. He came from a much more open Christ consciousness perspective. And so I was very blessed because when I was born, he was a deeply spiritual man. And so that led to, as a kid, I'd go into his office and I'd literally see probably 1,000 books on his bookshelf of The Power of the Subconscious Mind, with people like Joseph Murphy, Krishnamurti, Osho, Madame Blavatsky of Theosophical Society, Joel Goldsmith, The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes, Charles Fillmore, the old metaphysical teachers of the US, to Tony Robbins, Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Wayne Dyer, Louise Hay, you know, the modern, more modern teachers in the US as well. And so I, as a young boy, started reading at a very young age. And that began my obsession and quest with spirituality and self-help and personal development, and really just trying to understand the purpose of life. And so through reading these books, my first self-help book was a book, Creative Visualization, by Shakti Gawain. And she was one of like the original pioneers of visualization before The Secret and before Law of Attraction. I mean, it's like, think it and believe it. If you conceive it, then you believe it, you can achieve it. And so this was fascinating to me to understand about the power of the mind. And so I started to ask myself the questions as a young boy, the sense of like, who am I and what's the purpose of life? And, you know, I got a scholarship to a school that was very prestigious, where we're talking like presidents' sons of countries would come to the school, and people with wealth. And so I got a scholarship to the school. And yet it was strange, because folks who had reasons, they had everything, and they had a reason, every reason to be happy, seemed to be miserable. And yet in my father's church, folks who seemed to have nothing seemed to be happy. And so this was confusing. I'm like, what the hell is this? What's the purpose of life? Is it just to wake up and, you know, make babies, go on vacation, make money, and then die? Like, is that it? Or is there more? And that began a deep quest. And when I was age 8, I started speaking in my father's churches. I was sown in the audience, and that began my speaking career. When I was 14, I was ordained as a minister. Just all of a sudden, one Sunday, my father announces to 5,000 people, my son is taking over. He's my successor. I'm on stage looking at my mom, confused. No one had a conversation with me. All of a sudden, my entire life was set out for me. And I knew it wasn't right. I wanted to help people. I had a desire to impact people, deeply spiritual soul. But I just knew that my path wasn't the way my father was doing it, wasn't through religion, wasn't through the church, wasn't through this structure that had been built. And I just didn't have the courage at 14, you know, to speak my truth. My fear was, if I dared to be myself, if I dared to speak my truth, if I dared to be who I really was, that he wouldn't love me, that I'd be outcast, that I'd be abandoned, that I'd be alone, the community would shun me. And so I went along with it, you know, and justifying like, yeah, I want to help people. But deep down, I knew that something wasn't aligned. You know, that feeling you get when something's not quite right. And so for 4 years, from 14 to 18, I really struggled. I was reading all these self-help books and transforming inside. But I knew that there was this fundamental discord, conflict, misalignment inside of me. And depression, fear, sadness, conflict, turmoil, questioning for 4 years. But by the time I turned 18, I had to make a decision. Life is full of decisions. Whether I was going to go to university or not, I chose to not go to university, but now I needed to make a decision. What was I going to do with my life? And so I looked into my future, and I saw that I could follow the expected path for my life. I could do what my father wanted, what everybody actually wanted for me, hundreds of thousands of people depending on me, so to speak, their expectations on me. And I looked into my future, age 20, age 30, age 40, age 50, age 60, age just on. And I thought I could be successful by society standards. But if I didn't have myself, if I didn't have my truth, if I didn't have my integrity, if I didn't have my soul, what the hell do I have? What do I have if I don't have myself? And I felt such a pain. I felt a slow suicide. And I knew I couldn't do that. Because there was a sense of, if I lie now and I create a life based on a lie, I'm going to have to live my entire life as a lie. And the thought of that was so painful. Then I looked into my other future that I saw, and I felt a deep calling to come to America. I wanted to come to America, specifically the US, specifically Southern California, because all of the teachers and authors I'd read about were in Southern California. You know, Wayne Dyer, Louise Hay, Chopra, Canfield, Mark Victor Hansen, you know, Brian Trey, all these folks were in Southern California, Orange County, a few in Northern California, San Diego, and I wanted to come to learn from these people. And so I felt this undeniable calling. Sometimes what your soul wants you to do is not always convenient. What your soul, to me, your soul doesn't care about convenience and comfort. It cares about evolution and growth. And so I said yes to that, crazily, you know, enough, and had a conversation with my father and finally spoke to him and told him the truth. And it didn't go over too well. We didn't speak for 2 years. It was, for me, one of the most courageous decisions, at least at that time, as a boy who idolized his father, one of the most courageous decisions that I had to make in that moment. And it was difficult. It was challenging. Sometimes we have this idea that when we follow our truth, when we follow our purpose, it's easy, like life just unfolds and it's roses. But I think sometimes when you follow your true purpose, when you follow your soul, you're tested. The challenges begin. And to me, those tests aren't a sign that you're doing something wrong. Those tests can be a sign that you're actually on the right path. And your soul is needing, has to go through tests and challenges so that you can develop the mental, the emotional, the spiritual, soul muscle to become the person who is capable of fulfilling the dream and the vision of your soul. And so I think those tests are a necessary part of life and development and growth and living one's purpose. And so for me, I was tested. And cut a long story short, I spoke to my father and I ended up winning a green card afterwards in a few months in what's called the green card lottery. To me, that was a sign. Like I said, God, universe, you've given me this dream. You've given me this vision, but I have no idea how I'm going to fulfill it. All I know is that this path feels right. This path feels true. I always encourage people, follow the deepest impulse of your soul. If you follow your soul, you will always end up in the right place. You may not always go on the route that you expected, but you will always end up in the right place. Maybe not in your timing, but the right place. And so I followed my soul and ended up winning a green card in the lottery. And that was crazy. That was a sign for me that I was on the right course. That was a sign for me when I felt like I was in the desert, you know, with no support from the universe, and won this green card. It's like, that's it. I meant this is the path for me. And so two suitcases, $1,000, came to the U.S., knew no one, showed up in Los Angeles as a young 18, 19-year-old kid, just following a dream. And I wanted to meet the teachers and authors I'd read about. And so went and found some of them, learned from some of them, went to some of the seminars, harassed some of them, asked some of them to teach me, and just went on a quest. And then I started traveling the world as I made a bit of money and went to Thailand, studied with monks, went to India, studied with enlightened masters. And it was all in a quest to try to understand the nature of who am I and why am I here? What's the purpose of life? And, you know, what is the source of true happiness and fulfillment? And that was my quest. And it was from there that my, you could say, journey began, teaching one-on-one and one-on-five and groups and thousands and hundreds. And so, but my life really shifted. And I think where people can begin, for me, life shifted. But one of the things that keeps us stuck are all the ways we don't tell ourselves the truth. And I had to tell myself the truth about what I felt, about who I was, about what I really wanted for my life. And there's no shortage of people that I think will think they know what's best for you and who you should be and how you should be living, but they're not happy themselves, but they'll think they know what's best for you. And so I think you can't truly be fulfilled and happy living someone else's life. You can't truly be fulfilled and happy being someone that you're not. And so when I realized that, I realized that the key was I had to tell myself the truth. You know, in so many ways as human beings, we are lying to ourselves about who we are, what we feel, what we want, pretending to be something that we're not. We're lying to ourselves. You know, we stay in relationships that aren't aligned for us because of society, because we've invested so much, because it's expected. We work jobs that we know it is not the authentic expression for ourselves. We work jobs that we hate out of security and survival. And we know that this is not the purpose for why we were born. And so I think one of the first place I began, one of the first place we can begin as human beings to begin to break through and create a shift is really look at What am I lying to myself? What lies am I telling myself? And have the courage to be radically, compassionately, ruthlessly honest with yourself about what you're BSing yourself about, what you're not telling yourself the truth about, and face it. To me, truth is real yoga. Truth is real spirituality. Many of the things that we pray for, meditate for, go to church and temple for, like, God, please help me, would just resolve and shift and fall away if we just started telling ourselves the truth about who we are and what we feel. So just to kind of wrap, a few questions that I ask myself, a few questions that I ask my clients, a few questions I would ask everyone listening is, what lies am I telling myself? What am I pretending to not know? In many ways, we sometimes pretend. Well, I'm confused. I don't know. I'm not sure. When deep down, we have a sense. Deep down, we know. And what is it costing me? What are the lies, the misalignment? What is it costing me? Because to lie to yourself, to betray yourself, if we're really honest, costs us a lot. It's painful. It's meant to be painful. But one of the ways we perpetuate the lies is we distract ourselves. We deny it. We shop it away. We drink it away. We sex it away. We social media it away. We eat it away. We busy it away, just so we don't have to feel the pain of the lie that we're living. And so I think when we're really not living our truth, or we're or we are suppressing our truth, or we're denying our truth, it's meant to be painful. The pain is simply a signal. The pain is a signal and a messenger that we are not aligned. And so I think we just have to be willing to pay attention and use the pain as a feedback mechanism to bring ourselves back into alignment. So that's really where I began, owning the truth, telling the truth, speaking the truth. It was challenging, but I really believe that we have to have the courage as human beings to be who we are. We have to have the courage to live what we are. It takes courage. And so for everyone listening that you're on the path right now, I acknowledge you. I honor you. That's been a bit of my journey, and it's still unfolding.
It's amazing. And your question, what am I pretending not to know, is one of my favorite questions, because it is a question that will, if you're honest, cause perpetual realignment over and over and over again. Something that really strikes me about your story is how young you were whenever you were asking yourself these kinds of questions. I mean, yeah. 18, 19, to be like, oh, this isn't my truth, it's my dad's truth, even at 14.
Yeah.
And then to be able to, at 18, to make that courageous step. I'm curious what you think contributed to that level of courage that you were embodying at that time.
I wish I could say it was something, you know, amazing, but I actually think it was just ignorance. You know, as a kid, you don't know. All I knew is this is painful, you know?
Yeah.
And as a kid, I didn't really have that many distractions, to be honest. I didn't have children. I didn't have a mortgage. It's just, this is painful. It's not painful because of my wife, my kids, it's just because I didn't have that. I was left with, damn, this is painful. Why is it painful? I'm not telling the truth. And so because I didn't have anywhere to hide, it was pretty obvious why it was painful. And right. So that was a gift. And you know, and for me, I was willing, to be honest, to feel the pain. And I think that's something we have to be willing to do, is to feel the pain, to acknowledge the pain, to experience the pain. And because that's something that I did, I didn't run from it. I didn't distract from it. I just felt it. And when you really feel it, that begins a process inside. You know, some folks might be thinking, well, how do I know if I'm lying to myself? If I'm lying to myself, how do I know? And here's a few signs to call yourself on your lies or your BS or the sneaky way of the way that the ego works. Take a look at some of these things. If you're lying to yourself, but you're not sure that you're lying to yourself, because maybe everything is fine, things seem fine, is what we often say. Look at a few things. It will often manifest in an emotional turmoil. Like, you may think you're not lying to yourself, but you're feeling depressed, you're feeling sad, you're feeling resentful, you're feeling internal turmoil inside that might manifest as a depression. That can be a sign that you're lying to yourself, even if you're not consciously aware. Like, why am I depressed? Take a look. Am I lying to myself? Is there a truth I'm not telling? It might manifest as a heaviness or tiredness or lethargy. So you're like, oh, I feel so tired. I'm not sure why I'm tired. This can be a sign because it takes energy to suppress the truth consciously or unconsciously. And doing that starts to exhaust you over time. That's another sign. Take a moment. You might be lying to yourself. It might manifest as a physical ailment or symptom in some way. For instance, neck ache, shoulder ache, back ache. Like the body is giving you a signal or a message. Wait a second. Something's off. Pay attention. Listen to the message. If you lie to yourself more consistently over time in terms of suppressing emotions and feelings, it might manifest as a sickness or dis-ease, cancer, diabetes. It's like this is a sign of something trying to get your attention, a deeper part of it, and your body is now giving you a message of saying, hey, pay attention to where you're not aligned. The energy is manifesting as a physical so-called sickness in that moment. It might manifest too when life isn't in flow, because when you're blocking your truth, your energy and your authentic nature can't flow. So the energy of life can't flow. So when things in life kind sort of stop flowing, this can be a sign. Oh, I didn't know I was lying to myself, but is there any way I'm lying to myself? What am I lying to myself? Because things aren't flowing. When you're in truth and there's no blockages between who you are and what you feel flowing into your life, there's a flow, not perfection, but there's a flow. The other sign that you might be lying to yourself to take a look at is you might manifest or attract people in your life that reflect the unconscious resentment or anger that you feel within yourself about not living your truth, about not honoring what you feel. Because when we betray ourselves, when we're not true to ourselves, when we're not true to what we really feel, to get love, to get validation, to get approval, to fit in, it's a self-betrayal. That self-betrayal inside, there's usually an internal, whether conscious or not, anger, resentment, something inside that we feel about not honoring ourselves over time. And so let's say that anger, if we don't acknowledge it, we will tend to draw, attract, manifest people that will play that anger out to us. So if you're attracting people that are angry, resentful, rather than saying, well, they're angry and they're this and they're that, take a look and go, where am I angry? As a result, what am I angry about? What am I not owning the truth about? And these might be some signs too, to pay attention, even if you think you're not, as to where you are lying to yourself. So people can begin there.
I love that so much because it brings a sense of self-responsibility back whenever we're unhappy. For me, at least, it's so easy to be like, who's around? It must be their fault, which it sounds like you didn't have at 18 because you weren't, you know, you didn't have a partner and children and a job you hated and all those things. Like, oh, it's this. You have to really reconcile with what it is inside of you. I am super curious about, I'm going to shelf my one question and circle back to it. I'm wondering, whenever you say like that stuck energy inside and feeling the pain, is that a way that you recommend moving through some of the what's stuck as like feeling the difficulty and how you do that?
I think all feelings remain present until fully felt. All feelings remain present until fully felt. And feelings, first, I think it's important to cultivate a more expanded relationship with feelings, because as human beings from childhood, we are conditioned to deny our feelings, suppress our feelings, not feel our feelings as a way to function and survive on two levels. The first way is we're programmed by parents, by media. It's like, oh, you feel like, let's say you switch on the television, a commercial comes on, you feel sad. Well, don't worry, take this pill, do this thing and your sadness will disappear. No problem. You know, you feel sad, buy this thing. And this is then you don't have to deal with that. And so we're conditioned to not feel. We're not taught how to feel. That's one thing. The other thing too, is as children, we're born into a framework and environment. And maybe with your parents, there was pain, there was hurt, there was trauma, there was abuse, there was alcoholism, there was just neglect. And as children, it may have been painful. The environment may have been painful in some way. And because our nervous systems are very sensitive and, you know, the pain can be overwhelming, unconsciously, we started to learn how to shut down, disconnect, and not feel all of the overwhelming feelings as young children, just to function and survive. And so we slowly learned to suppress, to shut down, to stuff those feelings inside layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. And so we started to get conditioned to, often unconsciously, to not feel, as a way to cope, as a way to function, as a way to just live life. And so we started to lose touch with our own natural, organic feeling dimension, feeling sensitivity, in an effort to function, survive. And we began to erect, shall we say, walls in our hearts to just avoid the pain. And so part of it is an awareness of the ways in which we have awareness, acknowledgement, and the ways in which we've just learned to disconnect and numb and suppress our feelings, because many times we're not aware. We become so conditioned that we think that what we feel is what we feel, and who we are is who we are, not realizing that our relationship to our feelings is nowhere near to our full capacity, to the dimension of what we can feel. So we have to have that conscious awareness of, I'm not as in tune with my feelings as I thought. And that's part of, I think, the process of being human. So yes, all feelings remain present till fully felt. So when we suppress them, what feelings we don't feel or express in a healthy way will often either block us or express in unhealthy ways. Addiction, for instance, or even certain behaviors tend to be the positive intention underlying that tend to be a way to try to avoid pain or get some feeling. Avoid pain or get some feeling. And so we have to learn to cultivate a healthy relationship with feeling, recognizing that feelings aren't good or feelings aren't bad. Feelings are just energy. Feelings are just a messenger. Feelings are just feedback. And when we can realize that feelings aren't good or bad, they're just feedback, then we're able to shift our relationship to the feeling and start looking at and listening to the feeling for the feedback it's giving us, because likely it's trying to tell us something. I'm feeling this because something's a little off. I'm feeling this because there's a certain need not met. I'm feeling this because I need to pay attention to something inside. And so the more we're able to cultivate that sensation, that awareness, that relationship, the more we can shift our way of working with the feelings. And so here's what I would say. I invite people to feel their feelings fully. One of the ways to do that, or one of the most simple but powerful ways to do that, is to take the label off of the feeling, like good feeling, bad feeling, even anger or guilt or shame. Take the label, because even when we say, I feel anger, there's sometimes an interpretation of what that means, that we don't allow ourselves to fully experience it. And so many times I have found that people come to me like, I can't let go of this feeling. I've been feeling it so much. And as I talk to them, I realize they actually haven't been feeling it. They've been thinking about the feeling a lot, and they've been judging themselves about the feeling, or judging the feeling, thinking they're feeling, but they're really thinking about the feeling rather than truly feeling and experiencing the feeling. All feelings have a natural cycle. And when you feel the feeling and be with it and experience it, a layer of that feeling completes. And sometimes some certain feelings have more layers and more dimensions that we have to learn to be with those feelings. And so it's not like, let's say, grief, you feel some grief and it's gone. Grief doesn't just complete on a timeline. It has cycles and layers that, if you can understand, it's like peeling an onion. And so what I invite people to do is take the label off of the feeling and feel the feeling as a sensation in your body. So notice the feeling. Like, I'd invite people to say, where do you notice the feeling in your body? Notice the feeling in your body. Don't label it as good, bad, anger, sad, but feel the sensation. When you start to get in relationship with the sensation and experience the sensation of that feeling in your body and be fully present with it, you're fully present with it and you're fully experiencing the sensation and the feeling. You're not thinking about it. You're actually feeling it rather than thinking about it. Then the cycle of that feeling and energy can move through and complete itself as you be with it, hold it, and experience and notice what happens without trying to get rid of it, suppress it, manipulate it, move it away in any way. You're just fully being with it. And when you fully be with the feeling in the way we're talking about, not like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this, or oh, I don't want to. You're being with it, not trying to get rid of it. Fully being with it, then you're actually feeling and allowing whatever needs to happen, whatever arises, to move through. Tears might arise, physical sensations might arise, but there's an uninterrupted experiencing of the feeling and allowing the cycle of the feeling to complete itself and move through. To me, this is the key that we're often not taught, that allows the feeling to move through. And that's something I would encourage. And no feeling, truly, when you be with it, lasts forever. Even the worst feel, we're often afraid to feel because we're afraid, if I feel, it's going to last forever. If I feel, it's going to overwhelm me. If I feel, then maybe I won't come back, right? And so sometimes we're afraid. For instance, I remember 2016, my mother was diagnosed with cancer. This was what inspired my book, The Magic of Surrender. And when she passed away a year later, there was a depth of grief. There was a real, I love my mother so much. And there was a depth of grief, you know, that I felt when she passed. And I just allowed myself to experience the grief without judgment. One of the reasons we actually don't let ourselves feel fully too is this. There's the unconscious part of us that sometimes feels like, if I don't feel, let's say a relationship ends or someone dies. If I don't feel this feeling, then maybe I don't have to acknowledge that the relationship's over or the person dies. And so not feeling becomes an unconscious mechanism, a way to kind of hold on, right? To hold on to that person or that relationship or that situation. And so it's about letting go. And so when my mother passed away, I allowed myself to just grieve. And sometimes it was just being with the energy. Sometimes it was tears. Sometimes it was just breathing. Sometimes it was just letting sensations move through my body, and it was just allowing that. And what I found was there were moments when my heart, it was like my heart broke in feeling the grief, but it was so beautiful. You know, it wasn't bad because there was no judgment, like, oh, this is bad. And if I'm more spiritual, I should be in bliss. It was just energy moving. And so even in the grieving, it was quite blissful because it was as though my heart broke, but what that experience was is the shape, the current shape of my heart broke open. My current heart capacity, as I felt deeply into the grief, broke open, and there was more love. You know, what I found through the process of the grieving was my heart's capacity to hold love and feeling was shattered to a bigger capacity, and there was more love I found inside of myself for my mother, for life, for people. So when we suppress, let's say, the sadness, our ability to feel the sadness, we don't realize that we also suppress the polar, our ability to feel the joy and the aliveness and the bliss and the ecstasy at the same time. But when we open to one, we open to the other. And we have to realize, too, that we are not our feeling. We are not the grief or the pain. We are not the joy or the bliss. And so I tell people, don't suppress the negative feeling and don't try to hold on to the positive feeling. Just experience your feeling or experience your experience as you're experiencing it and just allow it to be. And you might find, if you really do that, the negative feeling, in quotation marks, moves quicker through you. And you might find that the positive, quotation marks, feelings tend to hang around even more because you're not clinging and holding on at the same time. And so with my mother, there was more love. But it's when we allow our hearts to break and feel that deeply that we find, that you'll find, that the heart cannot be broken. And I found that through feeling that, when you feel so deeply, the heart breaks and you're still alive and you see that your heart can't be broken, you find another dimension of strength inside you as a human being. It's like real strength, strength of going through the fire, not strength because you've avoided going through the fire of that feeling, but strength in going through the fire of that feeling, being remade and still standing. That's real strength as a human being. And so I think feeding those feelings can make us stronger. So hopefully that helped.
Oh my goodness. And thank you so much for sharing. I know this is what your book is about, but sharing here now about your mother and about the experience of your heart expanding through that experience. I'm so curious, since that and since the passing of her, what has shifted in your life about the way that you relate to others and yourself through that experience?
Wow. I mean, you know, one of the things that through the experience, you know, my mother was diagnosed with stomach cancer, September, October, 2016. It was totally unexpected. Yeah, you just think your parents are going to live forever, you know? And I was living in LA and I was flying back and forth. I started to fly back and forth from LA to London every month, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, flying every month to be with her for 4 or 5 days as she did chemo, take care of her, fly back, go back again. And it was interesting. During those chemo sessions, I would sit with my mother for, it was 8 hours, 9 hours straight as she was in these sessions. And we would talk about life and we would talk about just little things, you know, and things that even weren't that important, just shoot the breeze about, hey, this and that. And some things weren't even that deep. And it was like the best moments of my life. And I realized that I hadn't spent 8 hours straight with my mother since I was a kid because I was so busy running around trying to help people and do things and speak and save the world and inspire and this and that and build my career. It's like, oh my God, like how amazing is this? Just sitting with my mother, just talking, like how profound, how beautiful. And it ended up being the best year of my life, just being with her, you know? And so every time I go see her, I realized it really hit me. This could be the last time I see her because we didn't know when, what would happen. And so every time I go see her, it was a realization when I'd look at her, I would really look at her because I thought this could be the last time I ever see her face, like for real. But the truth is, it's like that anyway. You know, we just take it for granted. We think we've got tomorrow. We think we're going to see our parents. You know, we hold grudges because we think, we got another 10 years to figure this shit out with our parents. And we don't. But when you're faced with death, the reality of what is present all the time starts revealing itself. And so I'd be in the kitchen with my mom, watch my mother's Japanese, so watching her make homemade sushi, such a normal thing that I didn't even remember growing up. And I was just with it. Like, wow, this couldn't be the last time I see her doing that. Every voicemail she left me, I would listen to it, realizing this could be the last voicemail I get from my mother. This could be the last message, the last time. And every moment became so precious. And I began to realize, you know, and I live pretty fully, right? I began to realize the reality of feeling how I miss out on so much of life in an effort to get somewhere, you know? And it's really about the ordinary things that make life magical, not being on stage or the pursuit of a goal and reaching the mountaintop, but literally every moment along the path is life. And I realized how much of life I'd missed out on because I didn't think that these little things, just hanging out with my mom and doing nothing, were that important. So for me, it's not that I'm not working on important stuff, but so much shifted, you know, a deep appreciation for just sitting and being with people and those I love and the moment. And like life isn't happening in between. Life is the in between. And I think so many of us miss life because we're so busy trying to get somewhere else that we're not fully here right now. Then when we get to that place where we want it to be, we're not fully there because we're trying to get somewhere else. So we're not even there when we get to where we want it to be in that so-called somewhere else. So we're never really anywhere in our life anyway. And so we don't fully experience the juice of life. And so I'd invite people to just embrace the beauty and reality of death. You and I, we're going to die. We're going to die. Me, you, Bob Marley, Jesus died. If Jesus died, you're going to die. Buddha died, you're going to die. If, you know, Muhammad Ali died, Bruce Lee died, Gandhi died. If these great people died, we sure as hell are going to die. That's a fact. It's okay. But we often deny that. You know, we live like we have forever. And we don't. And to me, that's not a morbid thing. But it really, the process with my mother really brought home that reality of the preciousness of life and every moment, and to not take it for granted, you know. And so I'd invite each person to reflect on their life, hold death close, feel it close. You know, the people who died in 9/11 had no idea that they weren't going to come home that night and look their loved ones in the eyes and say, I'm sorry. The people who died last year had no idea that they weren't going to come home and look their loved one in the eyes and say, I really love you. And so I would just invite everyone to reflect on life and ask themselves, like, if death came right now, would you be ready? Or would there be regrets? What's unsaid? What's unspoken? You know, what's uncommunicated? We think we got tomorrow and we don't. And that's really, yes, I knew, but it really hit me, you know, and it's real. And we know until someone dies and like, oh my God. And so why wait? Why wait for that moment? If you're working a job that you hate, change it. If you're in a relationship that you know is not right, change it. Time is all you have. 86,400 seconds in one day. That's it. Tick, tock. It's gone. And when you meet your maker, whatever you believe, listening in, you can't go to God and say, hey, God, can I get a refund on those 3 years that I wasted in that relationship? I didn't realize that it wasn't. It's gone. It's gone. And so really got to see how precious, really precious this life is. Yeah, it's challenging, it's difficult, it's not easy, but it's freaking precious, you know? And so for me, it wasn't a change, but it was a deepening. It was a deepening of the appreciation of every moment, of the connection of what's important.
It's so timely that we're speaking about this. 2 weeks ago, my grandmother passed away. And it's been really interesting to watch my father grieve that. And she has had Alzheimer's for years. So I didn't actually know her in my adult life, because last time I saw her in person and she remembered me at all, she thought I was Elizabeth Taylor. So I was like, you know, it was a sweet compliment, but she wasn't able to see, like, she doesn't know who I am. She's actually gone. And I was gifted a beautiful Latvian prayer from my somatic therapist. We did this beautiful prayer. She is Latvian. So she offered this prayer to me where we gathered, you know, we visualized my grandmother and went through every room of her house and said, she's gone. You know, she's gone. She's no longer here. And then visualized going into the grocery stores and all the places she could have gone in her life and was like, well, she's gone. And supporting myself and also the energy of like, she's not here anymore. And then we also went to the places where her Alzheimer's could have brought her, whatever spirit realm that was, or, you know, wherever she went, that where she was divided between herself and somewhere else, and gathered her pieces there and said, you know, now she's all together. And she had, both of my grandmothers actually are twins. She had a twin and who had already passed. And so it felt like making peace with this idea that, like, it actually, like, she's all together now with this other side, with her twin. And this week, I don't know if you're familiar with Guru Jagat, but Guru Jagat also passed this past week, and who is just, was young and was just some, you know, it was so unexpected. And one of those things we were like, this contrast of, I didn't know Guru Jagat, but a lot of people that I know did and followed her teachings, but it felt so close of like, oh my God, like an old person, it's a different kind of grief where you're like, oh, well, they were, you know, it's but life. Then it's so real. Life. Yeah. And goodness, I was speaking with my partner this morning about this exact thing. So it's just so timely of like, are we living in alignment? Guru Jagat fell, broke her ankle, and in like 2 weeks was gone.
Gone. We don't, you know, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
This life is so delicate, it's so precious. And so I just invite people to think about, if death came, what would I regret? Mm-hmm. You know, what would I regret? Sometimes we We hold grudges to those we love. Like, for instance, when my mother passed away, I went through a lot of forgiveness over the years with my father, and we were okay, but I wouldn't say we were super close. And death puts into reality what's really important. And when my mother passed away, I just decided that I would love my father. I'd never done this. You know, he wasn't there for me growing up. We weren't close, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we were cool, but we weren't super close. But once she passed away, I decided that I would love my father as so deeply, like so devotedly, with everything I got. Like, none of the other stuff in the past really mattered. What he gave me, what he didn't give me, how he didn't show up, how he wasn't there. None of that mattered. And I made a decision, changed my life, in that I decided I would call him every day and just check in with him and love him every day until he died. Every day. Whether he did it or not. Up until that moment, I was like, well, relationship is two ways, and he's got to do it. Why should I always be the one that does it? Just dropped it. Because at the end of the day, none of that shit really matters. The only thing that really matters is the loving. The only thing I realize really matters is, did I love or did I not? Doesn't matter what the other person does. Many times we wait for the other person to change or be loving in order to show up differently. But the fact is, what matters is whether we loved or not, and the loving inside of us, and loving us fully. And so I started to call my father every day and check in with him every day for nothing important, just to check in. Never did this in my life. And it completely transformed our relationship in a way I couldn't have imagined. I mean, the depth of loving, the depth of caring, the depth of connection between us, you know, is just amplified in ways. And, you know, he feels the love because he's never quite been loved that way. And someone's shown up for him that way, cared for him that way, and the level of respect. And so in an unexpected way, totally transformed the loving. And so I would say, don't wait for anyone else. Don't wait for a special moment. Don't wait for another person. It really doesn't matter what the other person. For me, I realized I love my father. That's all that's important. What he does with that or what he doesn't do with that is up to him. I love him. I'm going to express that. He can do whatever he wants with it. You know, I believe that when we open our hearts to love and surrender to that impulse, when we open our hearts to love and we share that, we open our hearts. We're the one that expands. And in that, we're the one that gets the blessing of the loving, because we are the one that opens our hearts to expand. So our love muscle expanded, regardless of if the world gives it back to us or not. So when we open our hearts, we expand it. Our muscle develops, we benefit. So in a sense, love, because that's what you're moved to do. Love, because it's the right thing to do. Love, because it's the impulse in your heart, without any expectation for getting it back or it being received a certain way. Love because it's your truth. And I think when we do that, we always win. You know, we're always blessed. And it's natural to do that. And I think at the end of the day, it's the only thing that really matters. You know, it's the only thing that really matters. So I invite people to love now, to go deep, to express it. To me, that is real spirituality, you know. That is real meditation. That is real spirituality. We get caught up in chanting and mantras and, you know, plant ceremonies and yoga and these techniques and open the pineal gland and Bhagavad Gita and these, you know, reciting all these, you know, sacred texts. It's all great, but it doesn't mean shit if you're not loving. To me, real spirituality is how you live your life moment to moment, and the degree to which you love. That's it. Bottom line. And so as human beings, that's what we're here to do, to love fully. That's really why we incarnate, to love fully, to clear the blocks inside of us for our capacity to love and express that fully. That's true religion. And so that's the path of being human.
I'm so thankful you just spoke on this. I wrote a really sassy Instagram post last week, and part of it, and it was meant to be sassy, you know, it was meant to kind of like push the buttons a little bit, but essentially it said, like, good. Fuck your crystals if you're not loving your neighbor.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. Like, that,
it's true. What is the point of your, what is the point of your crystals if you're not loving your neighbor? Yeah. What is the point of your, they're nice. They look good, but what is the point of it?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. I, you know, this is speaking so deeply to me personally. I mentioned to you, my family is in Miami where you are. And I've actually been no contact with my mother for almost 2 years to really reconcile. Yeah. Some self-identity outside of the relationship. And I knew that there needed to be a firm boundary in order to do some healing work. And I've been asking myself, you know, when is that time? And I'm realizing, like you said, that yes, the relationship is two ways and all of that stuff I've been saying. And yes, I don't need to force forgiveness. And also I feel better when I'm not resentful towards her.
Yeah.
And I feel better whenever, whatever issues are going on with the family, I don't have to participate in that to be loving. And you're just so driving that home. And I know that there are people in this community who've had abuse in their families, or, you know, they've had to, maybe even their families have abused them and said, you know, you don't belong here, whatever it is. And have felt really that they don't want to be forced to forgive. And I hear this a lot from people in the community of, I've been told to forgive and that's how the abuse happened, or I've been told to forgive and then I stayed in things that were toxic. And I'm curious what you would say to people who, like me, or even more intensely, don't even want to forgive because of how triggering that is, how they can take responsibility for being the love, even if other isn't available for that.
Yeah, look, I would just say, you know, I have such deep compassion for what we go through as human beings, because as human beings, it's not an easy process being a human being. Fuck, I mean, this life as human beings is hard. You know, a lot of self-help people want to set it as love, light, crystals, unicorns. This shit is hard. This shit is difficult. This shit is challenging. And so unless you're just coasting through and doing it unconsciously, or just doing some spiritual la la land bypass, this thing is intense to feel, to love, to feel betrayal and give your heart. It's not easy. And so I just want each person to give yourself the compassion and gentleness for what it is to be human. This is not easy. And so if you don't want to forgive, if you're like, firstly, it's okay. It's okay. There's no like right way to do it, wrong way to do it. It's just, let's have some understanding with wherever you're at. Let's start by honoring wherever you're at. Because if you're able to give yourself that understanding of your own pain, realizing you're in pain, you've been in pain, you've been hurt, you've been betrayed, you've been, it's like, and really just be with that without judgment of trying to push yourself into be something or not, but just honor where you're at and your humanity, and hold your humanity with deep compassion, because, wow, I've been hurt. Then it becomes a bit easier to do that for someone else, to do that for your parents, because you start also realizing, wait a second, my parents, yeah, they're my parents, but they're just human beings. Yes, they're my parents. And sometimes we have this idea of my parents on this pedestal being this perfect. And sure, there's some things that maybe shouldn't have happened. Fair enough. But they're just as screwed up. You know, they have their, when we start seeing them as individuals, human beings, personalities, souls on their journey, they're probably even more messed up than we were, abused, hurt than we were. That doesn't make it okay. But when we understand that, they were conditioned based on their pain and their traumas from their grandparents, who were probably less evolved than we are now, and each generation hopefully gets more evolved, then it's like, to a degree, they, based on their pain, their trauma, their hurt, and the shit that happened to them, and what they currently believe about life based on what happened, they could not do it any other way. Doesn't make it okay. But they could not do it any other way. Like, if you really put yourself in their shoes and you see, if you believed what they believed about life, you would probably do what they did. Because based on what they believe about life is how they're acting, based on their past. And so that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it okay. That doesn't make it less painful. But hopefully we can open the compassion to go, oh, they must be in a lot of pain. Like, if they've done that, they must be in a tremendous amount of pain to act this way. And that doesn't mean you have to be around them. Doesn't mean you have to go to immediate forgiveness, but maybe it can open a little gap of compassion to see them in pain. For the most part, I can't speak for everybody. I've worked with thousands of people one-on-one, thousands over the last 18 years. Thousands one-on-one, thousands in a group. And almost every time, I don't even know if I've had one time when I speak to a parent who feels they screwed up the child, has been, you know, inflicted something to their child. I asked the parent, did you plan to do it? Like, did you sit there and go, yeah, my kid, my daughter, I'm going to type a list of all the ways I can fuck them up today. All the ways, oh, what are all the juicy ways I can abuse them, make them feel pain, screw them up. I got 200 ways today I can really screw them up. Yeah. What do you think, hubby? What do you think, wife? For the, I would say 99.9999, if not 100, that was not the case. They were just messed up. They were just messed up. Doesn't make it right, but they were messed up. When we can at least crack open that understanding, it can maybe open our hearts to a bit of compassion, because on one level, doesn't make it okay. They couldn't help it. If they're in that level of pain, they couldn't help themselves. And I think if we can open that compassion, it can open a little bit of space inside of our hearts to say, wow, okay, you know, they have their journey. And so to see them that way, in terms of forgiveness, I would say you don't have to force forgiveness. You don't ever have to forgive. Take that off. You don't ever have to forgive. It's not about having to forgive, not having to. It really comes down to, in the evolution of your life, do you want to be free or not? And how free do you want to be? It's not about forgiveness. I wouldn't even say forgiveness is better or forgiveness is worse or forgiveness is more. It's just, do you want to be free or do you not want to be free? And that's what it comes down to. So then at that level, it's no longer about your parents. It's about, do I want to be free or not? Because I can't control them. I can't change them. And I certainly can't change what happened. But now, as an adult, right now, do I want to be free? That's where we have to start. If we let our completion and our forgiveness rest on our parents or the other person, we are making ourselves a slave to the other person. It doesn't mean we're not justified. That doesn't mean some shit happened that, you know, we need to address. And that doesn't mean you have to be best friends with the other person. But we have to realize that if you allow your freedom to be dependent on another person and what they do, what they don't do, your inner freedom, you'll never be free. Because maybe they will own, maybe they will change, maybe they will apologize, maybe they won't. So you're waiting for them and depending on them to be more evolved, to say sorry, and maybe they won't. So if you allow your freedom, this is your freedom, to rest on that, you may never be free. And I say nobody, nothing and nobody is worth your freedom. And so I invite people to shift to your freedom. And ask yourself, do I really want to be free? And if you do want to be free, and you can't force it, but if you do want to be free, yes, then forgiveness is a path. Forgiveness is a gateway. But you have to realize that forgiveness is not for the other person. And forgiveness doesn't condone what they did, doesn't justify what they did, and doesn't mean you have to be best friends with them or hang out with them. It might mean you forgive them, but don't see them because they keep doing that abusive behavior. So the forgiveness doesn't condone, doesn't justify, and doesn't mean you have to continue in close proximity if it's not healthy, if it's toxic, if it's dangerous or detrimental for you. But the forgiveness is for your own internal freedom within yourself. And when you get that, that's the key. It's not even about your relationship with your parent or that person. It's really about your relationship. Real completion is not about the other person. It's about your relationship with the other person within yourself. Let me repeat, the relationship with the other person within yourself. So you don't even need the other person in order to forgive and be complete. It's your relationship with the other person within yourself. And so I think when you get that, it becomes less about the other person, whether they're dead, whether they're alive, whether they're not. And the willingness to take responsibility for your freedom, to let go and give back to them what is theirs, realize that they're in pain. And sometimes the ways we are hurt, as a side note, can also be based on the meanings that we've made up about what the other person did. Like, for instance, let's say I had a client, okay, whose her mother left her with her dad when she was 8 years old. And in her mind, so much anger, rage, hate to her mother, and feeling like she abandoned me, and feeling like I'm not enough, I'm not lovable, I'm unlovable, because my mother wasn't there. This was her belief about herself, which kept her unable to forgive her mother because her mother didn't love her. Her mother felt she wasn't lovable, not enough. Her mother screwed up, and I hate my mother, and I'm not lovable. Then she, and that belief ended up ruining her life because she was living her life in a way to reinforce that belief, not forgiving her mother, based on this belief that she didn't love me. And if I was lovable and worthy, she would not have left. And I had to ask her. So she made a meaning, right? And so I had to ask my client, could your mother leaving have meant something else? No. I'm unlovable. And she didn't love me. Well, show me unlovable. Where is unlovable? Like, this is a phone. I'd like to see. You can't show me unlovable on the table. It's a meaning we're making. So I kept asking. So ask yourself, could my interpretation of what someone's doing that is causing me to stay stuck and angry and resentful, could it mean something else? So in the example with this woman, well, I'm not lovable. Could it mean something else? After like an hour of massaging, she realized, well, I guess it could. The fact that she left, I guess it could mean something else. It might mean that my dad and her and my dad had some shit to work out that was so crazy they couldn't work it out. That was their deal. Nothing to do with me. It could mean that my mom was so messed up that she felt out of love, it would be better to not be around me. And maybe she left out of love. I mean, it could mean so many different things, but we don't realize and we don't question the meaning that we're making up about certain things that someone is doing, not realizing that that meaning is also keeping us stuck. So I think it's really good to question what we're making certain things mean about what someone is doing or not doing, because sometimes that keeps us from letting go and forgiving as well. Many times, every behavior tends to have a positive intention. It may not come out that way towards us when they scream, when they shout, but it may have a positive intention. And so if you can realize that, you can also develop a bit of compassion for someone as well. And when you realize, back to the beginning, when you realize that the other person is in pain, the other person is hurting, the level of hurt that they must be in, because hurt people are going to hurt people, the level of pain that she must be in to do that or act this way, it's not even about me. It's not even about you. It's about the depth of hurt that they must be in, that they don't have the forum, the podcast, the therapy. They don't have the resource to work through that hurt, and they don't even know how to. So how will they act another way? When we can at least acknowledge that, that can maybe open us up to some compassion, for some forgiveness. Because they can't help themselves, you know, from that hurt, they can't help themselves. And the way they're acting has nothing to do with us. When we acknowledge that, then maybe we're open to forgiving. But we have to also realize that that doesn't necessarily mean you will always be around them. It might not mean that you're going to have that loving relationship you want with them. It might mean you do have to have a bit of space, you know, or you're not seeing them every day. And so that you have to decide how you want to navigate in your relationship with them in a way based on the reality of where they are at in their consciousness, in the development and how they actually show up with you, you have to decide how that can interface with where you're at in a way that honors yourself. You know, I sometimes say that I have a perfect relationship with everybody. Everybody. Certain people, I choose not to be around. Just because every time I get around them, they hit me on the head with a baseball bat. It doesn't have anything to do with me. They just, based on their pain and their wounding, they can't help themselves. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I love them. It doesn't have to change the loving. You can love them. The loving doesn't have to change. The form might have to change based on where someone is at in their development, healing, and consciousness. The form might have to change because it's not healthy. It's like, I can't be around this person because they just hit me every time I'm around them. Doesn't work. And I've made a request. Okay. So the structure and the form of the relationship may have to change, but realize that the loving in your heart doesn't have to change. You can still love them. It just might mean loving them in a way that works and in a way that's functional for where you're at. You know, there's some people I love deep. I love them unconditionally. I just don't see them that much.
Totally.
Or when I see them, I accept and understand and don't expect them to be any other way than I know that they are going to be. Mm-hmm. Because they're in pain. So if someone is in pain, how can they act any other way? So let's say I'm in a gathering or family gathering or a party. I already know that that person's going to be how he's going to be. I don't expect it to be any different. So when I go in with that understanding, I can love them fully, but let's say I go to a family gathering and that person always takes my bananas. They always steal my bananas. Screw it, why the hell does this person always take my bananas? I hate them, I want these my bananas. But if I keep taking my bananas and putting them on the table in the family gathering, knowing that they're gonna take my bananas, that's on me. So doesn't mean I don't go to the family gathering. It just might mean I don't take my bananas to the family gathering and put them on the table.
This is so, it's cracking me up because it's really, this past year, I found out my dad has Asperger's and I spent years being like, he doesn't love me. He abandoned me. You know, he was an alcoholic. He became this radical Christian person who just, you know, he can't talk about anything else. It's his addiction. It's his one thing now. And it's the only thing he knows how to talk about. And he will talk over me and yell and be, and he doesn't realize, I found out that he's hurting my feelings. He doesn't realize that it's causing pain. He has one mode and it's that mode. And I just realized, like, I can set a boundary. He's not, I realized I was spending all this time thinking if I set boundaries, he would change, but he can't, he's not going to.
He can't. It's like if you have a cat, right? Mm-hmm. You have a cat and you're like, dear cat. If you love me, if you really love me, please, would you like, if you love me, just please go woof.
Yep.
It's going to go meow. It's like, oh, you don't love, please go woof. Meow. It's like, it just keeps going. The cat will never go woof. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's a cat.
Yeah. I don't know if you were about to say this, but it didn't alleviate, like, oh, in the past there was hurt and there's like grief to process. Yes. Of course, he can't meet my needs. There's grief. That exists. But if it could have been different, it would have been different. And if he could be different, he would be. And what am I going to do now? And that feels like the most, whenever you were speaking about freedom, the most liberatory choice is now what? Yeah. What do I do?
And you start realizing that, wow, to a degree, he can't help himself.
Yeah.
And not that that's right or that's wrong or that condones anything, but the pain that someone is in that they can't help themselves, it's like, wow, to like have the compassion, you know, to develop the compassion that they can't help themselves. And to feel that, here's part of the thing. Sometimes as human beings, we resist unconsciously going into full acceptance of who someone is, especially as between sometimes children and their parents, because there is a child in us that so wants the parent to love us in the way that we weren't loved. That there's a psychic unconscious fear that if I really accept them, I'm never going to get the love I wanted. So we're like, please change that. Get your mom, dad. And when we really accept where they are, we actually have to allow ourselves to grieve, to really just grieve, that we're never going to get what we wanted. It may never happen. We may never have the relationship that we wanted. And that's a grieving process. But what I found is you may not get the relationship that you ultimately wanted, but if you're really willing to come into acceptance, then you're maybe more able to receive what he or she is able to give you. May not be what you wanted, but when we're resisting, we're not able to receive what they're able to give us, which may not be a lot, but the something that they are able to give us, we're not open to. And so to allow yourself to meet there, like with my father, there's a lot that he couldn't give me, even now. But because I was so wanting something else, I wasn't open to what he was able to give me, you know? And so it's hard, you know, human is hard.
Yeah. It is. I have a curiosity, and then I want to move into rapid fire. Would you say that acceptance feels the same as surrender to you?
Yes, no. Yes and no. Acceptance is not surrender. Acceptance is not surrender. We sometimes mistakenly think that acceptance is surrender. So we stop there. Like, okay, I'm in acceptance. Let me back up a second. So acceptance. The first level is we're in denial. We're just living what we're living. We don't even know. We're unconscious. It's painful. We don't even know we're in pain. We're in denial. Okay. Then the next is we start the question. Wait a second. Something feels a bit off here. Something doesn't feel quite right here. The questioning begins. Then we move into another phase of now resistance. We begin to resist the changes or the things that we need to release and let go of because the ego tries to preserve its sense of identity and safety. So the resistance happens. After we've resisted a while, we move into negotiation. We begin to negotiate with life, our destiny. Maybe if I don't do this, but I do that, maybe I can still keep things together. But we know it doesn't really work. We're just prolonging our situation, the dynamic. Well, maybe they can change. Maybe my husband can change. Maybe, you know, we're just negotiating with ourselves. There comes a moment where we realize no matter how much we negotiate, nothing's going to change. We're not going to be different. The situation will be the same. We have to face the tune. We have to face reality. Then we move into acceptance. Like, okay, this is what it is. This is what she is. This is what he is. This is what the situation is. It's a good stage because in order to change something, you have to be in relationship with something, right? You have to be with what is. A lot of books talk about loving with what is, being with what is. But just because you're in acceptance, that doesn't mean you're in surrender. Acceptance is when you're being with what is. But you can, let's just say, you want to go outside for a sunny day on a picnic and you made all these plans and it starts pouring with rain. Now you're pissed off. Now you're upset. Now you're mad at God. Like what? And you kind of have to accept like it's raining. So you might still go outside with an umbrella, but inside you're pissed off. You're mad. You're frustrated. You're like up. There's an internal resistance of the experience that I'm experiencing is not the experience I should be experiencing. You're still a little mad. You accept, you go about your day, but you're still a little bit resistant. Surrender is the full participation, the full open-hearted, authentic participation in the process of life that is happening, every experience. You're fully participating. Like when you're in acceptance, you can be like, okay, I accept who my dad is. Shit. I accept who he is. Wish he wasn't that way. I'm not going to give everything because I don't like who he is. But I accept who he is. It is what it is. And you don't participate fully, right? For instance, as an example, you accept who they are, but like I'm going to withhold my love a little bit because they're not who I want them to be. It's accepting, But surrender is the full participation with the process of what's happening on two levels, realizing that everything that's happening is for your highest good, even if you can't see it right now. And it's the realization that you are a soul. When you understand that you are a soul that's incarnated in this human experience, and every experience is part of your soul's evolution, and life is a classroom for your soul's evolution, every situation and relationship with your family, with your dad, with your mom, with your boyfriend, girlfriend, everything, everyone is part of the classroom for your soul's evolution, then you shift your focus from what's happening, what's not happening, to what are the lessons that my soul is seeking to learn in this dynamic with my father? What are the lessons? Because he or she is your teacher. What are the lessons? And if life is about evolution and learning and growing and realizing more of who we really are, becoming more of ourselves and loving more fully, and life is the classroom for that, your dad is the professor, your mom is the professor, your boyfriend, girlfriend is the professor, then every moment is an evolutionary opportunity. And so when you start seeing life from an evolutionary perspective, you start to surrender to not just the situation, but to the lesson. What is he teaching me? This is a classroom. It's a university. What is he teaching me? What is my soul seeking to learn with him together in this dynamic? There's some reason that he's my father. There's some reason that I'm married to this person. So let me understand and work this out, because all lessons are repeated until learned. And when you shift your focus to learning the lessons, it gives you a different way of relating to the situation. Then you can surrender more and say, you know what? I don't like this. It's not what I would choose, but I'm going to surrender to learning the lesson, to shifting the karma, learning the lesson so that I can evolve and fulfill my destiny and graduate from this classroom. And when you focus that perspective to the soul lesson, then I think a deeper surrender can unfold, because you're less caught up in he did this and they're not doing that, and then that too. Let me learn here. This is a classroom. Wow, I don't like this, but wow, I understand the lesson and I'm learning. That's the gift. Now, between acceptance and surrender, I think I spoke about this briefly, but the phase that we often miss is in the middle, and that's grieving. Grieving. We talked a bit about grieving earlier. Many times we don't fully allow ourselves to grieve. See, surrender is a death. Surrender is letting go. Surrender is a release. So to truly move into surrender, where you are now fully participating, right? Let's say in your case, with this dynamic with your father, it's like, okay, it's not what I would want, but let me fully participate with like what my soul is seeking to learn. Like, I'm going to participate fully with this. That phase of grieving has to happen. And so I'd invite each person, as they think about what we're talking about, is to think about, what do I need to grieve that I haven't grieved? What do I need to grieve that I haven't grieved to let go of? The dream of the relationship I'm going to have, the dream of who I'm going to be, the dream of what I thought my life would look like. Maybe you need to grieve that. When you grieve that, you let go of the old. When you let go of the old, that's when you're able to embrace the new and look at the relationship through a new perspective. And so acceptance is a little different than surrender.
I so appreciate that, and appreciate you taking the time to really fully sift it out, because that was so beautiful. I have some rapid fire for you.
Sure.
There are six questions, and I'll be honest, I've heard that they could be an entire podcast episode in and of themselves. So I'm just warning you. Is there anything before we do that you want to say about your books and about the work that you're doing as an invitation?
It's been a joy being on the podcast. If anyone wants to find out more about my work, you know, kooplaxon.com, the book Magic of Surrender. I wrote it from my heart. It was not the book I thought I was going to write, but it was the book that I had to surrender to writing. On Amazon, get it, share it with your friends, and hopefully it will inspire you more.
We'll put the link in the show notes for everyone. So let's dive into some rapid fire a little bit here. And the first question, I think you may have answered already, but what is your spiritual background?
My dad was a minister, a spiritual being, and my mother was Buddhist. My dad was Christian and spiritual, and that was the background.
Beautiful. How do you know when you know?
You know when you know, because you just know. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple. You know, whatever else we do with that in our mind to question is a whole nother case. But we know deep down, we know. If someone put a gun to your head and said, what's the truth? We wouldn't know. Very rarely would we say, I don't know. There's a deeper knowing. I think we have to just learn to stop questioning ourselves and trust the deeper knowing. Tune into the sensation in your body. Tune into your feelings and feel the knowing. Because we know. There's a part of us that knows. If we're willing to be still and quiet and listen, we will be guided. But I will also say, in the path of surrender, one of the things we get to give up is the need to know. Like up here with our minds, know, you know, and the willing to allow life to lead us. I think that's the beauty. When we allow life to guide us and lead us, then you don't need to always know what something is or where you're going. But there's a part of you that knows, even when you don't know. And sometimes life, when you don't project onto life what you think you know, because often what we think we know is based on our interpretation of the moment, which is interpreted through the limited mechanism of our ego and conditioning. So then when we're looking through life through our ego and conditioning and projecting onto life what we think something is, we project that into the future, we end up limiting our future. And so I think there's a great beauty to be willing to not know. Say, I don't know, but I'm going to take a step forward because this is where life is nudging me. I don't know. So give up the need to know and understand what something is or isn't. Show up innocently, like a child. The child's like, it doesn't have to know. Well, why are you going there? I don't know. What? It's following the flow. And so I think part of the gift is to let life lead us. Life has an intelligence, and some things won't make sense from our current perspective right now.
I love the difference that you're saying between like a deeper knowing and the ego mind knowing, because there is a difference.
Yes.
The next question is, what identities have you personally had to let go of to own your fullness today?
Being the perfect son, being the good boy, being the caretaker, being the over-responsible one.
Amazing. What are you most enjoying learning right now?
Surrender.
Absolutely. What does grace mean to you?
Grace. Grace is life. Life is grace. Every moment is grace. Every breath is grace. You know, just life loving us in spite of ourselves.
Mm, love that. What is your go-to coffee shop order?
Don't really have one. But if I have one, it might be hot chocolate.
Mm. And the final question is, what do you want?
Everything and nothing.
So beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today. It has just been a delight, and I cannot wait to share this and hear the feedback on what people feel and gain from this episode with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Everything Belongs. With the number of podcasts and content online and your very full life, I really know the value of your attention, and I'm so grateful for every minute that you spend listening to this show and having these conversations echo through your home, your car, your workout, your life. Thank you so much for your time and your attention. If you loved this episode, it would be just such a thrill for me to see you subscribe and leave a 5-star review if you have a couple extra minutes. Whenever you leave a 5-star review on iTunes, what happens is twofold. One, I get to see what you're loving, and I get to see what episodes are really resonating with you. And in doing that, you actually provide me information on what kind of guest you want on the show and what specifically you enjoy, where I can create more content that really serves you. And secondly, it helps other people find the podcast, people who might resonate with specific topics like evangelicalism, boundaries, calling your energy back, and really living more fully in your power. So you leaving a review, if it takes 30 seconds, really supports the show and growing and supports me in serving you even better. If you're wanting to find the show notes for today's episode and all previous episodes, you can do so by going to madisonmorrigan.com/podcast. And if you want to get started working with me in a very simple capacity, just dipping your toes into the coaching work I do, the best place to start is the Call Your Energy Back practice. This free journal guide is a three-step process with a short hypnotic meditation, and it allows you to set energetic boundaries and call your energy back, supporting you to take up all of your rightful space, embody your wholeness, and live with the power that comes when you belong to yourself. If that interests you, you can go to madisonmorgan.com/energy-back to download it now. This meditation utilizes the brilliance of your subconscious mind and bilateral stimulation, along with powerful coaching questions to support you in releasing the energy and emotions of others, to generate a field of protection all around you, and will leave you feeling full of your true self, powerful, worthy, and whole. And of course, if we're not already connected, please come join me over on Instagram, DM me, and let me know your favorite part of this episode. Until next time, remember that curiosity can be a portal to a life where everything belongs. See you next time.